Thanks for calling Toyota. This is Jan.
I just adopted a new best friend, and I'm looking for a Toyota so we can make the most out of summer.
With a new RAV4, you can take your pup for a drive up the coast. You can take a Prius to the park, or you can take a Tundra to kayak at a remote lake.
One problem, Jan.
Oh?
My new best friend's a cat.
Your summer starts here, but it all ends June 3rd. Toyota, let's go places. Dealer inventory may vary. See your participating Toyota dealer for details.
Visit your Front Range Toyota stores today. Toyota, let's go places.
Hey fellas, it's 2021, and honestly, if you're not manscaped by now, you are lagging behind. You're probably not feeling your best as you could be, and if you've never been manscaped before, you may not know what I'm talking about, but you gotta trust me, you gotta believe me. Gonna make you feel better, gonna make you smell better, gonna make whoever's feeling you and smelling you feel better and smell better. It really is a win all the way around for everybody. Self-care is important. It's easy to make fun of this kind of stuff, but honestly, it can make your life a whole lot better. Go to manscaped.com, use the promo code DNVR. You'll get 20% off plus free shipping. Whether you're getting the full performance package 4.0, which comes with the razor and the spritzer and the boxers and all the good stuff, the deodorant that you get, all that fantastic stuff. Of course, you can buy any of those things individually, but whatever you do, if you take care of your situation, well, your situation will be taken care of. Absolutely a must these days, gentlemen. You've got to get manscaped. So do it today. Go to manscaped.com, use promo code DNVR. They'll hook you up at 20% off plus free shipping. Most importantly, you get set up with some stuff to make you the best you. Welcome into the DNVR Rockies podcast brought to you by Strava Craft Coffee. Don't forget to use the promo code DNVR25. You'll get 25% off your entire purchase of that CBD-infused, deliciously rich, and potentially life-altering Strava Craft Coffee. I'm your host, Drew Kreisman. I'm managing editor of DNVR Rockies. With me, as always, is beat writer Patrick Lyons, and joining us in what feels like has been for far too long of an absence from the show, hot off of his trip to Cooperstown, is the one, the only, from MLB.com, Manny Randhawa, one of our favorites. Manny, what's happening?
Hey guys, thanks for having me on. It has been too long, and I was excited when Patrick texted me to be on the show, and you know, I was thinking of you guys, man, thinking of you guys when I was up in New York. I'm sure we'll talk more about that here in a minute.
Yeah, man. First of all, really appreciated your tweet. I talked about that on the show, and maybe we'll get into all that again or not. But yeah, I did just, you know, we were kind of talking about this before we came on. I can't help but want like a kind of step by step. It's funny, Patrick said, give us, you wanted to start it like, okay, you land and you get off the plane. Like, I'm even before that, like, I'm like, you're getting ready to go. Cause you know, the pandemic, sadly, and certain scheduling things and stuff, I didn't get to make this trip. Sure. So I'm curiously through you, please. Take me step by step.
Well, I'll try to describe it as best I can. Just as background, I had been to Cooperstown one time before, but it was in the off season. So it wasn't, and it was not for an induction, obviously. So it wasn't, you know, I got to go through the gallery and I got to see the plaques and I got to go through the entire museum, which was awesome. But, it's nothing like, you know, going to see someone inducted, you know, whoever that might be. And obviously this one was different because there were only about 20,000 people there versus, I think they were projecting, you know, before the pandemic, you know, right when, Walker and Jeter got elected, I think they were thinking like 75,000-80,000, maybe a record. Yep. And so it was disappointing in that sense, but I mean, that's just how, that's life right now. That's just how it is. So, and I think that's really what kept the most of the Walker supporters, you know, not there. I mean, it's just too easy for the Jeter folks to drive an hour or two to get to Cooperstown and then drive back home that night, you know? And so it's like, for them, it was perfect. But for everybody else, you know, for Simmons and for for Walker, it was kind of like, you know, it was going to be a low turnout. I think I saw maybe half a dozen Walker jerseys the whole time I was there. So it's one of those things where it's like, you know, there's support for him and everyone's loving the moment back home in Colorado, but it's just, it wasn't exactly, you know, there for that reason. But, I didn't know what to expect, you know, just because, you know, I was thinking a lot about the push, you know, to get him in. And then I was thinking about the watch party that night, and just kind of the feeling of, shock, you know, as to what happened. So, you know, I remember embracing both of you guys individually afterwards. And I remember, you know, Danny Evans, and I remember, you know, our Sabre people, and it was just an amazing thing. And, so I was just trying to kind of recall that just to get myself kind of ready, you know, for what was going to happen now after it was delayed for over a year. So, I think, you know, I didn't know what to expect, and it was kind of surreal the whole time. I mean, even on the plane, it's like, you know, what am I doing? Where am I going? It's kind of surreal. And so when I landed, I was kind of eager to see what Utica's like, and it's really boring. There's really there's nothing there. Right. And it's just, the only thing is the cool part about it is that since I was staying there, it was kind of like, all right, this is where it started for Walker, you know, and, just kind of having that feeling of like, you know, this is honestly, that Utica was an outpost where they put guys who are long shots, you know, that was an unaffiliated team, the Blue Sox at that point anyway. And so it's like, this dude, you know, signed him for $1,500. He's a hockey player. He's athletic. He doesn't even know the rules of the game. Let's put him out there and see what happens. And obviously then the famous story, the third to first, you know, across the diamond, which he told and all that. But it was cool just to consider on the drive, you know, the fact that it was 33 miles from there to Cooperstown, and the fact that Larry is superstitious about the number, and the fact that he was the 333rd Hall of Famer. You know, it just boggles the mind, and, just kind of have all of these thoughts swirling in my head. But it was still surreal. Like, I didn't really feel like it was real. You know, I didn't grow up a Rockies fan, so I don't have that angle on it, but obviously I was pushing hard for him because, you know, when I wrote the book, I did the research and I found what you guys already knew. You know, I found that this guy is an all-time great. He belongs in the Hall of Fame. So it was surreal in the sense that, wow, it actually happened, and I still don't quite know how it happened, and now it's becoming real. So when I get there, you want a step-by-step? I'll give you step-by-step. I'm looking at $50 parking, you know, for all day, right there by the museum, right there by Doubleday Field.
Well, man, you could have parked downtown, and they had a little bus. They have a trolley that could take you down to the field as well.
That was down the street from the bus. Like, that was where the bus picked up, and it's like $50 to park your car there. So I found a metered spot for $14 for the day, and it was awesome. I was like, all right, cool, sweet. And went down to the first place I went, was, cause it was literally around the corner from where I was, Baseballism. Awesome store. Very cool. And then went to, I had to give one of the tickets I had for the seating to, one of our fellow media people that, cause I had an extra ticket. And so I went down to see him in the media workroom at the Clark Sports Center where they do the induction, and gave that to him. And I'm like, all right, well, I saw Jenny and Huey, and we talked a little bit. And then I just went back to, just walk around, have a little lunch, walk around. Cooperstown is a walk around place. I went to Mickey's, man, like you told me, Patrick, I went to Mickey's, awesome place. Larry Walker actually called the proprietor there and said, I want a bunch of stuff, I think. And he just didn't have the stuff. Like, he didn't have much of Walker stuff. It was pretty disappointing. It's like, what in the world? This guy's getting inducted into the Hall of Fame. Right. But it was cool. That's the stuff you see there, you're not going to find anywhere else. And, just the memorabilia and everything. Walked around there, went to the, when it was time, you know, I went an hour early cause I didn't know what to expect. Got into our seats. It was about, 80 degrees ish, partly cloudy, and it was supposed to rain.
That's not bad though. That's pretty good.
It's supposed to rain a lot.
It's been one of the nicer things. We're moving it from late July to when they beat in September.
It's not like 100 degrees with humidity, right? I was hot, but I was like, how do they do this in July? Like, how in the world do they do this in July? Yeah. So I get there, sit down, get my program or whatever. This is their program that they gave out.
Memories and Dreams. It's like the yearbook.
So this is their Hall of Fame magazine.
You can become a member of the Hall of Fame as well, and they'll send you those magazines. You get discounts on all kinds of gear at the Hall of Fame, and you get to go in as many times, you know, if you happen to be there.
And you get the seating too, like for these kinds of events. I actually got it from someone who was a member who couldn't go. So it was awesome. I didn't actually know what I was going to do with as far as, you know, what seating was concerned. But if there's anybody out there who wants merch, you know, they got you, they'll hook you up.
You got a lot of Larry Walker stuff there. And you know, now so many,
this is where you get the stuff, right?
When
you,
that's you the know, good stuff.
Order out of a catalog. But
a couple commercials too. I don't know, for the coverage on television, you know, they're selling the bats, some signatures and some stuff engraved. And, you know, and one thing you just said, like, how do you deal with it in the summertime? The last time or a couple times ago, my father and I went, we set our chairs up. So there's a big lawn, as you said, the Clark Sports Center that they have. And yeah, there can be upwards of 75,000 to 100,000 people, depending on.
I think the Ripken Gwynn one had set is the record, and I think that was 75K, something like that.
Yeah, that's a lot, and it goes all the way up onto this hill. But again, it's a free event that you can go to. A lot of people will set their chairs up a day or so in advance. Mm-hmm. In 2015, my father and I went. Yeah, there were six guys: Bobby Cox, Lou Piniella, Joe Torre, Greg Maddux, Frank Thomas, Tom Glavine. We set up our chairs, and to your point, it was so hot, we didn't even go. We learned that, and this is a little hack for anyone if you do go to an induction, stay in the Hall of Fame. They've got a little theater that's air conditioned.
Just watch it from there.
Watch live. So
it's just
granted,
much more comfortable, right?
Yeah, so you're not there in person, but you're a lot more comfortable. You don't have to worry about paying for that parking because you're already in there. And then you just got to go later and pick your chairs up, which
no one's going to challenge that story. No, I mean, you say, hey, I went to the
one's
going to
say you weren't there.
Yeah. No one's going
to
split.
You can show them your ticket. I went to New York. I mean, I was there. You know?
Now, if they knew what kind of chairs we had brought and the fact that we came back with different chairs gives you the idea of like, yeah, someone took our chairs because they said, hey, look, these jerks never showed up. So we got an extra souvenir for ourselves back home. And we just, you know, ended up taking somebody else's chairs that weren't as nice as ours. We downgraded, to be fair. We downgraded.
Yeah.
But it can get really hot. So,
Like it was only like 80 degrees when we're in September, and I was baking out there in the sun. And it was, but it was good that the rain basically held up until literally right when it ended, and then it started pouring. And so it's good that we got it all in and everything. There was some raindrops when Jeter stepped up there. I thought that might, you know, that there might have been a riot if Jeter had to move it inside, you know, for Jeter's part. Because, you know, honestly, during Don Fear, you know, talking about Marvin Miller, they were getting antsy. They were really getting antsy. They're like, all right, we don't want to hear more about the union, and we don't want to hear more about the player, you know, the things that free agency and the advent of free agency and all that. We don't want to hear about that stuff. So, because they're honestly, it was like 98-2 Yankees fans, everyone else. That's what it was.
Yeah.
And so, but it was cool. I mean, you know what, a couple of observations for me, Ted Simmons should narrate everything. I mean, Ted Simmons, I had no idea he had that kind of a voice. And it's just an epic kind of, it's kind of Morgan Freeman. He's got some Morgan Freeman in him where like he can make anything sound good. Right.
And before you move away from Ted Simmons, by the way, can I throw a recent pet peeve thing of mine at you? Well, since we are, I think forever, all of us now partners in crime and brothers in arms when it comes to these Hall of Fame things, there aren't enough catchers in the Hall of Fame. Catchers are underrated.
Yeah, I think you're
right. When our time comes, you know, there's going to be this group of Joe Mauer. Now he played some first base, I know, but Joe Mauer, Buster Posey, Salvador Perez, Yadier Molina, these guys.
That's a great point. I never thought about that. It's going to be a large group of catchers for us, right, when we start getting our votes. Yeah.
And even historically speaking, like, people, there just aren't that many. So I was so happy I'm with you and Will in the comments. Ted Simmons got to narrate everything, but also Ted Simmons belonged in the Hall of Fame because he was an extraordinary catcher.
Well, I think that, you know, with him, between him and Walker, you know, we saw a lot of, I think, progress.
Justice.
Yeah. And, you know, and it's funny because the juxtaposition with Jeter, who in a lot of ways is an overrated player. It wasn't, that wasn't the day to dump on him. I wasn't going to, you know, he's a Hall of Famer. I still think he's a Hall of Famer, but, the juxtaposition of him and then Simmons and Walker was very kind of like, okay, we got the traditional guy who is like, the only question is whether he's going to get 100% versus these two guys who should have been in before. And now they're finally in, you know, long, many years later. It was satisfying, I think, in that sense to see the progress, the justice, as you say, taking place in, you know, before it was too late for these guys. Obviously Simmons was the was the Veterans Committee, right? So that's it was kind of, you know, too late for him in the sense that he didn't get voted in by the writers, but his speech, yeah, I mean, I couldn't, that was what I took away from that. Like, wow. Like, I mean, this guy, I can't believe he doesn't do more stuff on television or radio or whatever, you know, just podcast, you know, just voiceover stuff, you know. He could narrate some Cardinal stuff. I mean, like on MLB Network and stuff, like I can see him totally doing that, you know, that would be pretty cool. And then, you know, and then Jeter, we'll save the best for last, but Jeter, I think was very Jeter, you know, it was. And I think I got this from the Yankees fans too. I went to dinner afterward, and I was sitting next to a couple of Yankee fans at the bar, and I was having dinner. They were probably done. They were having drinks and stuff and talking. And the MLB Network is just on, of course, and they're talking about guys who should be in and who aren't yet. You know, other guys. You know, Jeff Kent and all these other guys that they think they should be in the Hall of Fame. And, you know, they weren't exactly impressed with Jeter's speech, you know, and, you know, I mean, Patrick knows this. New Yorkers are, they don't care who you are. You know, if you don't bring it and do a great job, a super job, they'll let you know about it. Of course, they appreciated him. You know, they loved him. They showered him with love. And obviously these guys, I'm sure, did that too. But later on, when they're kind of reflecting, they're like, and literally these guys said, Larry Walker gave a good speech. You know, they were like, they made a point to say that, you know, because he was funny. He was, it was kind of like very down to earth and very, you know, we know Larry, he's just so self-deprecating.
He's
just everything is so relatable, you know, and whereas Derek Jeter, you know, and this is
the not two sides relatable.
Of,
yeah.
There are two
relatable.
Sides of this coin, because on one side, he
didn't have any gift baskets in my time.
He did have a career where he never was like in any scandals. He never was in trouble. He was never like, yet, like, he handled that really well in New York, and he did a great job of being like that image of the captain, the leader. But on the flip side of that is when you have things like this where you can't relate to him because nobody's like who's like that, you know, like very few people in the world are like that. And that says something good about him. But at the same time, it's also like Walker was literally a guy you could just be sitting next to having a beer and he's telling you his life story. And it sounds, that's the same way basically that it sounded. I mean, he's nervous. You know, he was nervous. You could tell he was nervous in certain aspects of it. I think he still delivered it really well. But for Jeter, I think it was very, I guess there's no better way to put it than very Jeter, very polished, very clean, very straight down the middle, very, you know, virtually no humor in it. And we won a lot, you know, and so it's like, and they did. And so I think that was the, everyone was waiting for that. That was the main event. Everyone was going to wait for that, but it was kind of anticlimactic. I think Walker, the beautiful thing about the Walker speech was how much people discovered about him in that 15 minutes, because they didn't look before. These are Yankee fans. They didn't care. They didn't look, they know he's going to go in along with Jeter, but all that matters is Jeter and for them. And I literally had people like, commenting about how funny this guy is and how enjoyable it was to listen to him, and, you know, utter shock at how little he knew about the game when he started, and utter shock as to how far he came in just from Utica in 1989 and 85 to the Hall of Fame, and a guy who basically played almost no baseball until that point. And so the things that we have been saying for years, these people were just finding that out. And it was fun to see that happening in real time. There was a guy sitting behind me who, when the commissioner read off his plaque, he was just absolutely, his jaw was like, he had to pick his jaw up off the ground. Like, it was unbelievable. And so he went, what? He was like, what? He goes on his phone and he pulls up Walker's baseball reference page. And he starts looking at the batting titles. He starts looking at the MVP season. He starts looking at all of this stuff. And he's like, he really did do that. He literally had to get – it's on the plaque, man. Of course he did that. But, like, if the fact that you have to go and you have to confirm it for yourself, that's because you can't believe it. They really got to know how great Larry Walker was, and it happened right there, even before he stepped to the mic. And then when he stepped to the mic, they learned about how congenial of a person he is. And I think, you know, it was really cool that he, I heard you guys podcast afterwards about how, you know, he gave the kind of embarrassing anecdote about, you know, going third to first, you know, and across the pitcher's mound out on a hit and run, and that where the ball was caught in the outfield and not knowing that you had a retouch second. And he said it because why, and Drew brought this up. He said it because he wants kids out there to know if you don't have, you may not have the pedigree, you may not have the experience, that hard work does pay off. It happens. It can happen. I'm living proof of it right here. This can happen for you. And that's just for Canadians. That's for anybody. And so, you know, it was cool to see that. He was very good about acknowledging everybody that needed acknowledgement, obviously in his career. You know, I can't be easy to do three teams, and it can't be easy. It was cool that he gave a shout out to Montreal and said, I hope you get a team back. You know, that was awesome. Love because, you know, as we know from just what we've seen, you know, from documentaries and what we've seen from interviews with fans, you know, in Montreal and Quebec, it's like that the love that they had for that franchise was unique. And I remember, you know, after Pedro Martinez won in 2004 with the Red Sox, he says, my ring is with them too. You know, like he had to bring that up, Montreal, because, you know, all those guys dispersed. Wetland won in New York. Pedro won in Boston. Larry got to the World Series with the St. Louis, you know, so all these guys dispersed and had what they might've had in that city. You know, and like Larry said it, I mean, who knows what would have happened in 94? We were 70-44, six games up on the Braves. And it's like on August 12th when the work stoppage happened. Who knows if that goes through? They win the World Series, new ballpark. You know what? You know, you don't know. I mean, a lot of things could have changed for that city. And but Montreal's pain, Colorado's gain. And you know, he talked about why he came here. Obviously, he just followed the Rocky Mountains down, basically, and he's here. And I think that for Colorado fans, you know, he took a minute to talk about Colorado fans and the desire. He said this for the book too. I think it really means a lot to him. If you guys who are watching, go and call up on YouTube his farewell from Denver, the press conference where he left, and he was holding back tears. He was crying. I think he might have cried, but he was choking back tears at the least, and he said, you know, when I asked him about leaving, he said, the people, it was very hard to leave the people around here. And he said he hopes that there will be a ticker tape parade. He calls it that, ticker tape parade, down Blake Street. You know, he said it for the book. He said it in the speech. And I think he really is sincere about wanting to see that before he's dead. Honestly, he told me before I leave this earth, I want to see, you know, the Rockies win it all. And he said, when we were talking for the book, he said, I really feel bad for that fan base. I really do, because it was so exciting at first. You know, in 95, we win the first wild card. We should have beat the Braves. And if we had, we're in the NLCS. The Braves swept the Reds. Who knows what we would have done to them? Who knows? You know, they're not that far away in their third year of existence from reaching the World Series, honestly. They threw it away. But then he said, honestly, like he said, then we were terrible. And, you know, and that's why the fans, you know, what do you expect, you know? And so, and I feel it too, because I'm not a Rockies fan and I've done my fair share of Rockies bashing, but, the reason behind that really is because this fan base is incredible. and this fan base, what they had, what they showed in 93 when this team came here, 82,000 people. Walker mentioned that in the speech. He said, I never forgot opening day 93 at Mile High because I was there as an Expo. He wasn't playing, but he was hurt. But he said, I'm so glad Eric Young hit that home run. He told me, he's like, because I got to see what this fan base was about. And I remember that when I became a free agent, and I told my agent, you know, let's call the Rockies, you know? And, for him, it was all about playing in front of that. Everybody wants to play in front of that. And this fan base has given the Rockies a lot, you know, in terms of their support, their love, their passion, even in the lean years. And so you just hope for them, for their sake, that at some point in the relatively near future, they become competitive. And by that, I mean deep into the postseason. And the cool thing about it is that as much as we can't explain why, they're a great team at home. They win, and they're entertaining to watch. They're fun to watch at home, right? If you're a Rockies fan, it's like all these guys are stepping up and doing these things. Guys like Connor Joe out of the coming out of the woodwork, and you're like, I mean, Connor Joe legit is having, like, by any standard, a fantastic offensive season, you know? And, you know, when things start to click for some guys, it's pretty awesome. It doesn't really completely take away how the team was gutted, in a sense, when Arenado left. But at the same time, it's good. It's a good sign for them, at least for the future, if they can figure out the road thing. But the bottom line is the fan base is so great here. I think Walker did a good job of kind of acknowledging that and saying what he hoped to see for this fan base in the future.
Yeah, well, we'll let you catch your breath here. There's a lot of beautiful things to talk about. I'm just waiting for you to get down the path where you talk about, you know, how good the nachos are at Blake Street Tavern, and tying that in, you know, maybe the wind blowing out to left field on certain day games versus night games. But
right.
I love the takeaway of Yankees fans having a little bit more appreciation for Larry Walker. And I imagine when they get home, or when they had gotten home last week and watched the recap, like anytime you're at an event like that, you want to relive it again.
Yeah, you want to relive it and
watch the highlights
again.
And they see Larry Walker and I go, is he wearing a SpongeBob pin? Right. This guy.
They probably had no, you're right. Yeah. They probably couldn't really see it. And then when they see it, they're like, what is up with that? Like, because they have
Coast
no,
loves
like,
Larry
we know
Walker
what's
now.
About here, but they're not going to know. But the other thing too is however many millions of people, tens of millions of people watch that on MLB Network. I think that a lot of the same reaction, I'm sure, because in Colorado, we know, but you know, and in Montreal, they know, and in St. Louis, they know, but elsewhere, you know, East Coast, West Coast, when they're watching that and listening to those accomplishments listed off and listening to this, the unbelievable numbers that he put up when he was playing, I think that's a really good thing, because I think one of the things that the people, those of us, including all three of us here who were pushing hard for him to get into the Hall of Fame, wanted was an acknowledgement of how great a player he was. Not just, yeah, right. He got in, which is huge, of course, because now he's among the 1%. And he's voted in by the writers. It's all of that, you know, notwithstanding, the casual baseball fan got to see on last Wednesday that this dude was a stud. This guy is one of the, if he had, and I maintain this, if he had, we were talking about guys like Eric Davis and Ellsberg, you know, before the show, Larry Walker, man, you take Larry Walker and make him healthy. And give him 600 more games or 700 more games, we're talking top five right fielder of all time. And like right field insane. Is usually represented in the Hall of Fame. You know, he's already top 10. If you look at Jaws, right, he's already top 10. And it's like, people are shocked when they see that, but if he was healthy and he could stay on the field, this guy, you know, he would have been, I mean, cause this guy could hit on the road. This guy hit better on the road than at home in 97. He hit 29 out of his 49 homers on the road.
It's still the most wild stat of his career. People like to quote all the other things. And like, there's a lot of great Larry Walker stats, and I love every single one of them going on down the list. But the hitting better on the road in his MVP year. By the way, I've got to toast my Breck brew. To that, I've also got to sell my Breck brew to that. I've got to remind everyone out there to drink your Breck brew along with. They might have even been toasting Breck brew to Larry Walker out there. on the East Coast for the first time ever. So we got to appreciate that. Remember that you can get your 15 can sampler of Breck Brew down at King Supers or your local liquor store. You get a bigger one at the DNVR bar. If you are a member of the family, subscribe today at the DNVR.com. You get access to all the written content. You get discounts on hats and shirts. You get a free shirt if you get the annual. You get access to our Discord channel, which is just a private chat room where we're talking baseball 24/7, all the other sports, of course. We got channels in there to talk about anything and everything, TV shows, movies, whatever you're baking, whatever you're taking pictures of, what you've been, well, you haven't been snowboarding lately, but you're about to be out there in just a couple of months, all those kinds of things. So check in on that. Subscribe to the DNVR.com. You'll get access to any number of amazing things, including getting hooked up with some of our friends like Ball Corporation. You know about Ball. They just got the naming rights to where the Nugs and the Avs are going to play. They also just treat everybody, including the planet, as an everybody. Awesome. They've got a 100% on the corporate equality index score from the human rights campaign.
Basically, Derek Jeter missed out on by one vote on the corporate index there.
That's right.
But not Ball. He was at a 99. Not Ball. Ball and Mariano Rivera, 100%. Only those two.
That's right. 100%. They take care of the environment. They take care of their people. They're hiring right now for their plant in Golden. So check them out. Text GOLDEN to 77222. You'll get linked to open positions. You can also go directly to jobs.ball.com. Search for GOLDEN. That's jobs.ball.com. Search for GOLDEN or simply text GOLDEN to 77222. Could not find a better place to work than out there at Ball, making great products that don't, you know, poison the environment or do it. It's actually sustainable materials. Everything about it is great. Check them out at jobs.ball.com.
Now, again, we're here with Manny Randhawa at Manny on MLB, reporter for MLB.com. Fantastic book. If you don't already own it, check it out. The Blake Street Bombers, all about that. One thing that, you know, I know you're not going to bring up because you're too modest, but you helped spearhead a really fantastic event in fall of, well, 2019. It's hard to keep track of these dates. Fall of 2019.
It's crazy that it's been 2 years now.
Where we all gathered together, the baseball-loving community here in Colorado, as well as the Sabre, the Uber nerds that we have, gathered for an event to really go all in. And we recorded it, shared it with a bunch of the members of BBWAA to help get the word out and say, look, people really need to dig a lot deeper with the numbers. And you were a huge part of that, and maybe you can discuss about that final step. I think that push that Larry Walker ultimately ended a meeting, since he only got that 75% of the vote by a handful. Yeah. And well, that, I think that event in fall of 2019 was the last piece that he needed.
Well, I appreciate you saying that. Thank you. I think I'll give you my theory as to what happened, because I still am kind of shocked even 2 years later, because nobody overcame that much of a deficit in the last 2 years, 34 to 76 in 2 years. So I still don't really know how it all happened, and we'll never know, because we can't bring in all of the riders that were converted to Walker's case here and have them, you know, be accounted for, but explain how they came to change their minds. But here's what I think happened. That event at the Blake Street Tavern, we had, you know, Sabre hosted it, Rocky Mountain Sabre chapter hosted it. So Paul Parker and all the board there, everybody who allowed us to do that. I mean, huge, huge credit to them to put the event on. I brought my PowerPoint basically, and Dan Evans, this is crucial. Dan Evans went up there with me. I think, and again, this is not false modesty, I think that Dan Evans is this person single person most responsible for Larry Walker in the Hall of Fame. And the reason I say that is because right beforehand, he pulled me aside and said, hey, let's put this camera. I got a camera. I brought a camera. Let's put this camera over here on the table so we can video. We can take video, and then I'll tweet it out, and, you know, we can start disseminating it on social media. And I didn't think much of it at the time. I'm like, all right, yeah, good idea. So let's do it. And we did that. And then Dan, like, Dan came out guns a blazing with amazing stats. Like the best one I remember from that I'll never forget is he said Larry Walker played in a higher percentage of his team's games than Ken Griffey Jr. did in his career. You know, stuff like that, you know, makes you think. And I think that after he did that, and then we put the video up on YouTube, and then Dan Evans, for all that don't know, is a former general manager of the Dodgers and a former assistant general manager of the Chicago White Sox, and one of the most respected baseball executives in the game, or former executives in the game. Like today, he's a huge reason why the Field of Dreams game went off the way it did, because he was a huge part of that. So
40 years working in various roles, yeah, around MLB. He's a baseball lifer,
and he's so well respected. And he's got a lot of important people that follow him. And, you know, he got calls from writers saying, why are you on this Walker thing? What's the deal here? And he got, and I think that through that, then you have the grapevine that extends out. And then you have all these connections on social media then Tyler Kepner writes an article on like the day before, you know, the ballots are due about how Walker should be in the Hall of Fame. With the New York Times. So Tyler is with the New York Times. So the momentum kind of started rolling from that event, but it was, I think Dan's foresight in getting this recorded and getting it out to the people that are important, and lobbying those people when they called him and said, here's why Larry Walker's a Hall of Famer. You know, I won't say names, but like really national baseball writers calling him up and saying, what's the deal here? Like why Walker? Like Walker doesn't seem to be a Hall of Famer to me. Why are you with it? So, I think that's what happened. And when we were, when we were watching at the watch party, he was at some distance from me. And, right before Tim Mead went up there, the president of the Hall of Fame, to announce the results, he was like, what do you think? You know, he's just kind of signaling to me like this. And I'm like, I think he's going to fall short by literally a handful of votes. And,
I think I said three. I thought he'd fall short by three.
That definitely was
what I was feeling. Walker, right? It was a gloomy day. I remember, I think it was like kind of cloudy and it just,
yeah,
cold. There was excitement in the place, but you go, no, it's, I did the like Rockies don't get it.
Four
the
live shows that day and you can literally watch me change as a human being.
Like, did it get worse?
There's that one snapshot that somebody took of Drew and myself standing next to each other right as it got announced. And I think I was doing the fist pump. And I think Drew was like,
he jumped up like a puppy
whose owner was home. That's what Drew did. It was the best.
And he started jumping. Yeah. And so like it was, you know, it was just, and I think Danny had an inkling that this is going to happen. And
you remember though, to drive your point home, because I asked the room, we did a show before the announcement.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
And the vibes in the room were not, oh yeah, we're here for a celebration. Oh, Larry's getting in.
The vibe was Nolan Arenado's leaving and Larry Walker's not going to be in the Hall of Fame. That was the vibe. They made Nolan Arenado mad. That was the thing, right?
Right.
And
there could not have been a group of people with more tightly squeezed sphincters in all the land.
I guess that's the way to put it. Yeah.
We must get. But yeah, we really were. And so I'm glad Danny had a feeling about it, because I'll tell you what, the rest of that room, and you remember when I asked, is this – you know, is this a comment not just on Larry Walker, but on the entire Colorado Rockies organization and on your fandom? And every person in the room threw their hand up and said, yeah,
yeah,
I feel like it is. So that room was ready to walk home. Said, I gave a speech. I remember giving a speech, like preparing that room to walk home sad. Like, if it doesn't happen, go out there and
it's like a calling on your life, man. I mean, that's what you've been doing for a long time and you're good at it.
That moment was incredible.
The moment was, you know, I'm glad it was preserved, because I mean, it was just the sheer shock value. Like I think there are very few moments in your life where you can have a collective feeling of utter shock, like as in like there wasn't, I really doubt, because those are the people who show up to these things are hardcore, like they know their stuff. I would have a hard time believing even one person in that room thought Larry Walker is gonna be elected. One. Right. And I don't think that there was anybody in there that thought that was going to happen. And, you know, at first it was like, you know, I didn't sleep that night. I tried, and I woke up, of course, at 3 o'clock in the morning. It was just, everything was just, it was just adrenaline, because it's like, what just happened? And how, my biggest thing was like, how in the world did this happen? And then the whole, you know, Larry saying that he had settled at 73.3 for obvious reasons. And then that he got 3.3% more than that to get to 76.6. And then, I didn't find out until I think after the press conference with him that he on Twitter that he's number 333. And, you know, just crazy. So it was very special. It was very cool. It was, I won't say who it was, but I had a grown man come up to me in tears and hugging me and saying, we got one in there. You know, it's like, we are legit now. There's just going to be a CR in that plaque gallery at the Hall of Fame, which means Colorado Rockies baseball is good. It's not in the sense of like, we have guys in our history that belong there, just like other teams have had. And so, as tumultuous as this last couple of years have been with this team, and as much blame has been laid at the feet of the front office, and I think deservedly so, it was kind of an uplifting moment that, you know, when that happened, because, you know, that was literally, I think, the day that Nolan said the word disrespect to whoever he said it to, or the day after, or whatever.
Yeah.
And so it was like everything. And this was right after. And this was right after that 19 season when they lost 91 games, after that real, the high of going to, you know, back to back postseasons. Mm-hmm. And so it's like almost like, don't kill these people, man, by Walker not getting in too. That's just like a triple. Right. Right. And then it's like, yeah. And then for that to happen, it was on so many levels, it was special. And I'm thankful that I got to be part of it. Again, when that guy came up to hug me, that's when it hit me that this meant to you guys, to the Rockies fans, to people who have grown up around here, to people who have been a fan for their whole life, because I'm not that guy. So, that was really probably the most rewarding moment for me, was when I got that feeling of what it meant to the fans that Larry Walker was elected. So very, very cool. And now it's done. You know, I had somebody from my I used to work at the Indianapolis Star. That was my first job out of school. And one of the producers there quoted my tweet when I had the picture with the sculptor, of, you know, pointing to the plaque, that he posted a GIF, quoted my tweet with a GIF of a soldier leaving his post saying, my watch has ended. And so my watch has ended now. I think the last thing, I didn't really know how I would feel about it. I thought my watch ended on January 20th, 21st, 2020, but it kind of just feels like, okay, that's closed now. That thing's going to be there forever. That plaque is going to be up there, and it's got a CR on it. And now the 33 is going to go up. That's the last thing. You know, once the 33 is up there forever, then, you know, it's and I think I said this afterward, after the watch part, after the announcement, that this is a testament to power that social media can have. I mean, that's what Walker mentioned, that he said social media gave it a push, and he's right. I mean, it's a testament to the power that, you know, just a group coming together to do something and try to make it happen. I still think it was, you know, I mean, this thing was a long shot from the beginning, and I still am amazed it happened. I remember asking him a year before that, when I went down to Florida to talk to him for the book. And I said, well, I prefaced it with, it's a long shot, but what would it mean to you get in the Hall of Fame on the last ballot? And he said the typical brilliant wit of Larry Walker, specifically his brand, it would be cool to go with Derek Jeter, but it'd be cool for him to go with me. And it was like, and he was of course just joking about that, but there's actually truth to that, because
but there's so much truth to it though.
Because the guy that was the main event for this Hall of Fame induction ceremony produced less value than the guy that went before him. And it took him 759 more games to produce the value he did, that Jeter did. Yep. So it's like, honestly, that's besides the home road split in 97, that's the stat right there, is that the guy who gets in with 99.7 produced 72.4 WAR in his career. The guy who got in on his last ballot by 6 votes, waited 10 years, So the exact opposite, the polar opposite, had a higher WAR, and he played in 759 fewer games to get to accumulate that value, which is why I say if that guy was healthy, we're talking about an inner circle Hall of Famer. We're talking about a guy that would have hit 550 home runs, maybe 600 home runs, a guy who would have stolen 300 bags, 400 bags, just gaudy numbers, and Coors couldn't hold him back. So Larry Walker will forever be the guy that broke down the door for MVP for the Rockies, and he broke down the door for Hall of Fame. And now Todd Helton should have been MVP in 2000 over Jeff Kent, and I think Todd Helton will be the second Rockies Hall of Famer. I think that's going to happen before his time is on the ballot is up. So good things.
Yeah. Let's hope that when he gets in, it's not also with like Mark Teixeira or CC Sabathia, and then you got the whole Yankees storyline. Like, come on!
I know, right?
Out of here! Enough of the Yankees.
Yeah, the shoo-in guys. Yeah, yeah, the Yankees. I mean, who's next? Like, is there anybody else from that dynasty team that?
I think we're clear for a bit.
Jorge Posada, I think.
I don't know if Teixeira Hall of Famer though.
Yeah,
I mean, I honestly don't know. I haven't even given it a look. So
I want Todd Helton and Scott Rolen to go in.
Scott Rolen's a Hall of Famer.
We got to have those two guys. And you and I saw your tweet the other day, and I'm glad you and I are in lockstep on this. Though it's past the time, so we got to do extra work on top of it. Kenny Lofton's got to go into the Hall of Fame. What the hell happened there?
Kenny Lofton is another guy that, I mean, for him, because he's the guy who dropped off the ballot, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think
that's even worse. Larry stayed on the ballot. I mean, this guy dropped off the ballot. You know, and it's like there was not, besides Ken Griffey Jr., he's playing the shadow of Ken Griffey Jr. all that time. But besides Ken Griffey Jr., you know, in the 90s, I don't think there was a better center fielder.
Marquise Grissom was, they were neck and neck. And in fact, they were traded for each other. But yeah, outside of that,
but I think Lofton, in terms of defensively,
yeah.
I mean, yeah. Grissom, don't get me wrong, great defensive player, but he's made some of the best catches I've ever seen. I mean, so Lofton, you go back and watch Lofton in the highlight reel, man. And it's like just the literally like forearm over the wall, bringing things back, and his speed,
one of the first guys who could do that consistently robbing the home runs. He did it consistently. There's a few guys, if you go back and you look, that dropped off the ballot quickly because Bonds, Schilling, Walker gets in finally on his 10th ballot, but you're like, all right, so for 9 years, guys were giving him votes that
could have gone.
It could have maybe gone to Kenny Lofton. Edgar Martinez was on it for a long time.
And as we're talking about it, I'll say Dick Allen, absolutely Hall of Famer. Everybody go look at Dick Allen's numbers. That guy should have been in the Hall of Fame a long time ago. I mean, it's mind-boggling. So there are still people for whom to, you know, I get emails. I got an email off my Walker story from before he went in for MLB.com. It was an email saying, all right, now get to work on Roger Maris. You know, everybody can make, you can make a case for a lot of people, but there are only certain people that you can make a really good case for. Yeah. And Rolen, Allen, Lofton, guys like this, you can make a really good case, you know? And I think I'm done with that, because that one's enough. I mean, that was a process, and it was fun, and it was like, but it was also intense, and it was, you know, so I'm gonna leave that to the next person. But
Drew has 7 years now. He's got 7 years to work on his healthy case to bust it out.
Helton needs me to write a book. You know, I wrote a giant thing on Walker year one. He was eligible, I think, and then I just kind of watched it grow from there. The Helton thing, I don't think he even needs. I think he's going to get in comfortably.
I think he's going to get in.
Can't be too cautious.
More of a margin than Larry did. Yeah.
I mean,
but not right away. I mean, it'll take a few years, I think, but it'll happen.
If it's going that way, I'll write the book. Don't get me wrong. I mean,
that's what I'm saying. You get what I'm saying? You have 7 years. Don't procrastinate, Drew. Don't.
What's amazing now? The Todd Helton thing, and I've got to do one more ad here in a second, but what. It always blows me away that his 2000 campaign was even better than you think. However good you think he was in the year 2000, he was better than that. Bump it up more, because
look at that. That was one of the great offensive campaigns in recent memory. Absolutely.
He was batting like close to 500 in months, in entire months at a time, like for huge chunks of time. He was doing ridiculous things. And
he was also the most valuable player of that season in the National League, however you sliced it. I mean, look, if you want to go to war, they got it wrong. The writers got it wrong with Kent. If you want to go to sheer numbers, the writers got it wrong with Kent. But again, I think some of that too is the 2000 Giants won 97 games. And so, you know, it's again, the continued, and this remains today, the continued emphasis on how the team performed is bogus, because you are punishing a guy for his teammates, and that's not fair. Right. If a guy is valuable, he's valuable wherever you put, if he's playing here or he's playing there, he's putting up those numbers. He's the guy. Shohei Ohtani's the MVP, you know, and he's going to play for a team that's middling, and they're going to finish again. You know, the most frustrating team in baseball really is actually the Angels.
The Angels.
Because they are wasting prime all world talents here. Mike Trout and Shohei Ohtani in the middle of that lineup. And so it's very, anyway, that's a whole podcast right there, but that guy's going to win the MVP and he's not going to be on a playoff team. And that's the bottom line, is you gotta be fair. And that's what this whole Walker thing is about. Be fair about it. Okay. You know, don't go like, well, we don't say Coors and then say, we throw the advanced metrics, the park adjusted numbers that you said, I don't like those either. What are you supposed to do then? You know, it's like, that means that the guy just can't get in. So the thing with Helton is that, you know, back then there wasn't this kind of understanding of how underrated some guys can be. I think we're more aware of that now than we ever have been because of guys like Walker and Edgar Martinez and Tim Raines and these guys getting into the Hall of Fame, for example. But even in voting, you know, the writers voting, they got it wrong so many times. Because, you know, obviously they didn't have advanced metrics back then, but at the same time, even based on, here's the funny thing. It's ironic. 1995, Dante Bichette was his WAR was so far behind Barry Larkin, but here's the thing. They weren't looking at WAR.
They didn't know what WAR was in 1995.
No, WAR wasn't a thing. They were looking at the numbers, and the guy led the NL in slugging, RBIs, hits, homers. And like what he said to me was, you know, all respect to Barry Larkin, but my road numbers were like his entire season numbers in terms of sheer raw homers and RBIs and all that stuff. I know RBIs is a context, is not a context neutral stat, but you got to look at what the
baseball's
people were looking
a context driven game
back then. 1996, Ellis Burks was not the MVP that year, in my opinion. Barry Bonds was, but Ellis Burks was, but neither was Ken Caminiti. Ellis Burks should have finished higher than Kim. Ellis Burks probably should have been second in MVP voting, not fifth. So it's like the bottom line is that based on numbers they're looking at back then, in fact, based on numbers they're looking at, Ellis might have been the MVP that year. So that's that's the thing about the Rockies. That's part of the reason I wrote the book. And the second edition is the 24th of this month. It will be coming out. One of the big reasons I wrote the book is because we don't really know just how good these guys were because of the way they're looked at by the wider baseball world. The Blake Street Bombers are looked at as they were good players. They were average to good players that became awesome because of Coors Field. And the bottom line is, look at their careers before that. Look at their careers after that. And a lot of inspiration in their stories. Guys like Galarraga, who basically was about to quit before Don Baylor changed his stance and changed everything. Guys like Vinny Castillo, who's a skinny, scrawny shortstop who hit fastballs, but was behind Chipper Jones in Atlanta. And, you know, Gephardt pulls him over to here. And when Charlie Hayes leaves, instead of them going out and getting a third baseman, like, move the kid over. Let's see what he can do. You know, Gene Glynn helped him out and he had a great arm, and the rest is history. And so same with Dante. Dante was always a great student of hitting. He just didn't get that chance until he got here. So Larry was this exception. Larry is the all world guy. He always was that guy. He was, if 94 had finished, he might've been the MVP in the NL of 1994.
Vinny was a shortstop coming up too. So
it's easy
to say, oh, he was behind Chipper. So he, you know, that's a shame. He was behind Jeff Blauser at shortstop for Atlanta. So
Yeah.
Again.
Well, actually, yeah, you're right. You're right.
How John Scherholz, sorry, you missed one on that.
You missed one on that. Blauzer was, yeah. Blauzer.
I like Jeff Blauzer.
He's a solid guy, but he's not, he would, Vinny Castilla, what he would have done with them, much more. You're right.
I'll tell you what that is there, fellas. That is some unwise mortgaging of the future. If you want to have like wise mortgaging of the future, you got to get with our friends at Chevalier Mortgage. You got to do it. Mike and Virginia, they'll take care of you. They know all about this wild and crazy housing market in Colorado. Let them take the burden off of you. It can be stressful, but it doesn't have to be. They know the market. They also know the sports. They know the DNVR. They're a longtime supporter of ours. So if you need someone who's going to take care of you, but also maybe be able to chat with you a little bit about the things that you care about, the sports in this area, especially if you are CSU Rams fans who are just looking for someone to commiserate with right now, just looking for someone to reach out to. It's great. Mike and Virginia, they actually double. They're great mortgage people. They're going to help you out here, but they can also be therapists, for mutual therapists for you, and that you have to listen to their Rams thoughts too, though. It has to go both ways. You have to listen to their problems with the Rams. They listen to yours. You can all get together and talk. Either way, what you really should do is go to dmvrmortgage.com, enter to win a free shirt or hat of your choice. More importantly, you get set up with a free consultation to discuss all of your options. dnvrmortgage.com. You can also call Virginia directly at 303-257-6578 or Mike at 970-412-2472. Michael Chevalier, NMLS number 1931006, and Virginia Chevalier, NMLS number 1910631. Gotta love those guys taking care of us. I love this stat too, with Todd Helton in 2000, swung and made contact, no contact. So he swung and missed. Thanks, Will, for tripping me up. Swung and missed on 117 pitches that season. I mean,
you consider that he had about 600 at bats. Actually, you don't use at bats, you use plate appearances. How many plate appearances did he have? And so you divide that out and you think about how many times he missed, what percentage of the time he missed. Let's say, how many pitches did he see per bat? Yeah.
Of course.
That's unbelievable.
580 at bats because he did walk 103 times. All right, gentlemen, I have a question for you.
You walked.
And
ooh, quiz time. This is good. Yes.
And I think this is a good question since I know where you both stand. And so I'm asking it when I may be in the minority. So the question is this.
Well, good. I love it when you can put Patrick in the minority. This is good.
Is Joe DiMaggio overrated? Discuss.
Okay, I'm not looking at any numbers right now, and I feel
like I'm not going to achieve this question.
This is a conversation, right? Because there's no right answer. It's just right. Opinions.
No.
Is Joe DiMaggio overrated?
Right.
Yeah.
No.
All right, May's going yes. Drew, you're going
probably. No. Probably. And I only say that for one reason, and that's because of the 56-game hitting streak. That's an enormous accomplishment. It's amazing. Nobody's ever going to do that again because of the number of pitchers guys face. But back then, you faced one guy the whole game usually. And so the 56
Mom
game.
Says yes, but she's a huge Mickey Mantle.
Yeah,
that's a Mickey Mantle. That's a Mickey Mantle thing. She didn't say
that. I think when you get overrated, it's hard to get overrated if you're as great as Joe DiMaggio was. But it's possible in the sense that when you have a number attached to you, like 56, you are mythologized beyond what you were, even if what you were was one of the greatest players of all time.
Yeah. I mean,
so
right. How rated is he? That's also one of the, whenever you ask, is something over or underrated? He's one of the greatest of all time. He's considered one of the greatest of all time. I feel like we're matching up here pretty good. But you're right.
I suppose.
There's a lore. There's the. Mm-hmm.
He's in the song.
There's the romance of it all, and the time in which he played. It's kind of like when Manavita says, "I would have struck out Babe Ruth, like no problem."
He's probably right.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying is that like if you put these people in a vacuum and it's a video game and you can let them face each other, what happens? And so I think it's definitely, I think the same could be said for Ted Williams. Ted Williams is considered by many the quote greatest hitter of all time. And he may very well have been, but the 406, again, that number attached to him, the era in which he did it, the number of pitches he saw, how the velocity he saw, the types of pitches he saw. I'm not, you know, again, one of the greatest players of all time.
I'm not doing that against Jacob DeGrom.
And you're saying he's overrated? Ted Williams is overrated? He could be.
Wow. And I could, honestly,
yeah, I love this.
Honestly, you could say the same thing about Babe Ruth. In fact, Babe Ruth may be more so than these guys.
I did a few days ago. Someone asked.
You did say that.
If he was the greatest,
but he was this transcendental figure of in the game because he changed it. You know, I mean, he went from Ty Cobb hit a lot of people, but Babe Ruth was like near the top of the list because he changed the game so much from what Ty Cobb knew and was so good at the small ball game, the speed game, it became muscle, and the home run captivated everybody, which I mean, we understand why. And literally, Yankee Stadium was the house Ruth built because everyone wanted to see him. That was the reason they had to build it. And so, you know, we loosely use that terminology, the house that whoever built now, but it's never been like with Babe Ruth. And so Babe Ruth, I think, is not overrated in his impact on the game. I think he's overrated in his skill as a baseball player, probably. Yeah. Shohei Ohtani.
Shohei Ohtani is doing right now is
far beyond what Babe Ruth ever did.
100%. Well, with Joe DiMaggio, don't forget, 13-time All-Star. This is after missing 3 years in his prime military service.
All-Star is also
3-time MVP, right? Yeah. 3-time MVP. Dude won 9 World Series. So I say this. If you think Joe DiMaggio is overrated, then I understand the argument of why you think Derek Jeter is overrated. I think they are very comparable because if you take – so statistically – I think both of them sit very similarly for their era, right? But it's what they do beyond the game, like as far as being a star, like almost transcending the game beyond like, wait, Derek Jeter is an athlete. I'm not even sure what sport he plays. There are people out there
who know
Joe DiMaggio by that. I think that's where the overratedness comes from, and I get it.
I took the question to mean as far as ball player, period. And so – With respect to the impact on society beyond the field, absolutely. Babe Ruth is not overrated. Derek Jeter is not overrated. As a player, Derek Jeter is way more overrated than Joe DiMaggio would be. Derek Jeter is one of the more overrated players of his time, I think.
Man, he's singing his song now.
But the thing is that that's as a player. You know what I mean?
Just as a ball player.
He had this when we talked a little bit about it with his speech earlier, he had this kind of aura about him where he was just wired to be the cap, quote unquote, the captain of that team. He was wired to do the thing. He was wired to, you know, he came through in those moments. He's Mr. November. Whenever there needed to be 3,000 was a home run. Whenever there's some guys that, you know, every time there's an occasion to rise to, they do it. He's that guy, but all the rest of the time, he's overrated, you know, because he's not a good defensive shortstop. He was not a good defensive shortstop. Gold gloves are subjective. Again, all-stars, gold gloves, MVPs are subjective. He had the best team of the era around him.
Which he led, which he was the captain of. And he well,
that's
right. Oh,
captain, right? That's the intangible, right?
But he was never the best player on his own team.
I'm just saying that if you take it by based on actual ball player, he is overrated. If you take it on the beyond that, no, because I saw what he means to those people. I was there. I was there. Yeah, and I was in a sea of Yankee people. And it was like these people would have globe-trekked across the world if they had to be there. And so not just because it was necessarily in, you know, New York. So I don't think he's overrated in that sense, you know, but I think he's overrated in as a ball player. Yes.
Almost every
part of the numbers that Joe DiMaggio, the war numbers between him and Walker.
It's every Yankee is overrated in the same way, except for the ones that have been legitimately, I mean, just beyond extraordinary. And we all go, well, shoot, look at that.
Like
guy.
Mickey Mantle.
Mickey Mantle's not.
Well, New York is just a polarizing place. And I think it's either you did it and, oh my gosh, you're like a demigod, or you couldn't deal with New York, or you just weren't good enough. And it's like, I think that's where you separate. You go, Randy Johnson, sorry, you didn't get the job done. Yeah. You know, in New York. And so there's that loaded element to it that it's almost like if you can do it in New York and you're a Hall of Famer,
it's different there.
That's worth bonus points, you know, in a lot of ways.
No, that part of it, and Jeter was able to do that, right? As we were talking about earlier, how he had never had any off the field issues. There's a big part of it where with the media, right? And so, but also, there's a guy that might be underrated, a legend that might be underrated. It's Mantle. And I'll say, and here's why I say that. If you look at Mike Trout's, take one of his MVP seasons, I think it was 2016, maybe take his 2016 and compare it to Mickey Mantle's 1956. It is scary similar, the numbers.
Yeah.
But except for one thing, Mike Trout was healthy. Mickey Mantle had no knees. And so honestly, we are seeing the second Mickey Mantle with Mike Trout. And I love, this is one of my favorite things Patrick's ever said. He said he's the 2-7. Trout is 2-7. That's his number. He's the second seven. And he really is. But if Mickey had been healthy, Trout wouldn't compare. And that's crazy to think about. And so because of the injuries, I think he's underrated, which is crazy to say that Mickey Mantle could be underrated. But yeah.
He's the guy. He's the all-time coulda, shoulda, woulda.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think is second
up there
on that list, maybe certainly number one in modern times. Mickey Mantle is the all time. Yep. He was a Hall of Famer, no doubt, surefire, one of the greatest of all time. And he was never healthy. Like Griffey got half.
Yeah, I mean, if you make him healthy, he might have been the best position player that ever suited up.
Yeah.
He could very well have been that guy.
Yeah. My mom's loving it. She's like, oh, now they're singing my song, light some candles.
Oh, Mickey, yeah. Oh, I didn't. Oklahoma. You're welcome, Barbara. It wasn't for your fandom or anything, but I really believe that, you know.
And don't forget, Mickey Mantle nickname, Commerce Comet. Mike Trout, otherworldly, the Millville Meteor.
It's just so many. And if you look at their build and their, and you put them side by side, it's crazy. It's eerie. It's uncanny. Mm-hmm. They're even built the same way.
Mickey Mantle.
That's the great thing about baseball. We can go all the way from Larry Walker into the Hall of Fame to the Rockies to Mickey Mantle, and we can do it all
and that was just the first segment, I think. We were on that roll.
Yeah, I know.
Don't forget Mickey Mantle, named after Mickey Cochran. Mike Trout,
named
after the fish. And that's all I gotta say about that.
Oh wow!
The fish, man. I mean, the Angels love their fish, right? Trout, salmon. They're the number one and two on the home run list.
That's amazing.
Funny, when I was at the airport, I took a picture of the parking level I was on at DIA. It was a trout level. It was the fish level, and I was looking at it, and I took a picture. I'm like, why is there fish on here instead of the greatest baseball player of our time? Because that's all I think about now, and it's a sickness. But that's all I think about when I see the word Trout, is that he's the greatest right now and what he could have been if he didn't miss time for the pandemic and for injury.
Third most home runs for the Angels. How about third most home runs for the Angels?
Who's that?
Guppy Smith. So you're just
making that up. So, but the things like that in baseball are fun. Like the 3-3-3 stuff with Walker, that'll always be there. It's like the gas prices when I left is through the whole state almost like $3.33. It's crazy.
It's like, you know, this can't be real.
Yeah. So fun. It's fun. And you know, it's what baseball is, right? I mean, baseball means a lot to so many people, and I think for a lot of different reasons. But part of it is just the shared history and tradition of it all, that we can, you know, we can all talk. You know, it's like I talked to those guys. I got into that conversation at Double Day Cafe with those guys next to me about all these guys who should be maybe Hall of Famers that are not. I'll never see them again, right? But we had that conversation, and it was because, you know, I didn't tell. It's really fun when you don't tell them what you do.
Right.
Having that conversation with them. And
I love talking sports with people who have no idea that you work in sports. It's one of the best.
Exactly. And then there's preconceived notions. So you just like talk to them like a fan, and you're like, and then, you know, and you kind of have a good chat about baseball history. Like one of the guys started saying, I'm going to give you some numbers. You tell me who this is, you know, play that game, you know, and, he gave me
player
369.
Player A versus player B. Oh, we know that game, baby.
Yeah.
I know that game.
We know that game here. Yeah, no, like he gave me this guy's not in the Hall of Fame and should be. He gave me 369 homers. I'm like, that's Todd Elson because I know that number, you know, because I know 383. I know 383 with Walker. I know 369 with Helton. There's certain numbers you just remember. And there's certain guys you're like, how come I can't think of this one? And then when they tell you, you're like, oh, of course. You know, so, yeah, you can do that with a complete stranger. And then never see them again. And you had that minute with them that where you had fun doing that. So that's baseball. It's a lot of fun.
Love it. All right, everyone. Speaking of a lot of fun, we had a lot of fun on this one. Make sure that you're following along with everybody on social media to continue the fun. I'm at Drew Kreisman. He's at Patrick D. Lyons. He's at Manny. How many asks can I get into one sentence?
Manny, where can people pick up the second edition? Where can people get the second edition?
Yeah, on the 24th, Amazon.com, type in Blake Street Bombers. It'll be there. It's
September 24th. September 24th, the day before Larry Walker gets inducted, or rather his number gets retired there at Coors Field.
Exactly. Good timing. Yeah. And so now that Walker is in the Hall of Fame, that was the last part of this. His whole speech is in here and is the last part. And so basically it was a pleasure to turn chapter 17 of why Walker belongs to why he's in. And so that was the best part of updating this thing. So, 9/24. And it's on the eve of Walker having his number retired. And it's Walker weekend. That's the last one, man. That's it. That closes the chapter on the Rockies' first Hall of Famer, I think. And he's being feted now, and as he should be.
I'm getting finally getting his due. I'm getting a second copy, Manny. So I'm gonna be bringing it to you. Get ready for the inscription.
Right. Of course. Thank you very much.
Well, yeah, you gotta get the updated one. I know most of the people listening to this already have the book, but you want the most updated copy. It's got all this stuff in it because Walker's in.
Yeah, I mean, it's literally called the Larry Walker Hall of Fame Second Edition because it's a monumental event in this franchise's history, and obviously for the Blake Street Bombers, they got a Hall of Famer now. So, he headlines that group, and now the last chapter is the biggest update, which is has his entire speech. So it's recorded there so that you can always refer back to it if you so desire. You can,
that's cool.
And all the numbers are from the case we made for him are there still too. So it basically saying, here's why it took so long because of these misconceptions and blah 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 blah. Ad nauseum, we've gone over that. But it's coming out. It's been a lot of fun to do this and to work with the guys, and stay tuned. We might have some when this COVID stuff is over, hopefully we might have some stuff in person stuff. So
that'll be great, man. Well, we'll keep everyone updated. Like I said, follow everyone on social media to make sure you don't miss any of that. Subscribe to the dnvr.com for all the cool stuff that comes along with that. Keep being absolutely awesome baseball fans out there in the world. We promise that we will keep being absolutely Patrick Lyons, Manny Randhawa, and Drew Kreisman in here. And until next time, we will see you at the ballpark.